Mike, Kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
The Point of View.
Legal matters.
All right, it's that time again where Ntabi Singh joins us. It's a Wednesday and she is here to take all your questions. 086-000-00959. WhatsApp voice notes as well can come through on 063-688-0959. So a quick update on the budget issue. So what will happen tomorrow is that we will have quite a nice breakdown on the processes with people who understand parliamentary processes, people who also understand the bill itself, the Monetary's Bills Act. And we'll also just break down the couple of, you know, 101 issues, just to explain a couple of things. I'm getting so many messages, even on X, where people want clarity on a few things. And we didn't obviously get through everything. It wasn't quite possible to get through everything. But there are things that we need to clarify, the distinction between the fiscal framework and the budget, and the different stages that this process goes through until the very end. And so we need to just make sure that everybody's on the same page, that we are all on the same page. And so that will happen tomorrow, and looking forward to that expert knowledge that will be coming through. So it's 9 o'clock and Ntabi Singh is here. Hello, Ntabi Singh.
Good evening, Pamela. How are you?
Well, you've been busy today. Apart from the budget, you've had other things that you've been looking at, which I'm not sure are pleasing at all.
And no.
I think you've had a lot of uproar with relation to the Omotosho trial, which has been really, really sad to watch those who have been affected by it.
Yeah.
And you know, there are all sorts of questions around his rights.
Mm-hmm.
And the time it's taken the trial, and those who also, the victims' rights as well. So very, very difficult to balance it all out.
But yeah.
Quite a judgment there.
It is, and it was scathing, to say the least, for this NPA.
For the government.
Yeah, mm-hmm. In terms of how they handled the matter. And don't get me wrong, as a defense attorney, I am all for the judgment because of the manner in
which it was botched.
Yes, mm. Yes. Because remember, at the end of the day, the state, I always say this to my clients, that it's not our job to prove that you're innocent at all. As a defense attorney, it's not my job at all. My job is to make sure that the state fails in its endeavor to prove your guilt. It's the state.
And that's the nub of the issue,
yes.
Is it not? And I think activists speak to this all the time, to say, in actual fact, if we can remember that, unfortunately, the state needs, it's the state that needs to prove,
yes,
that he is guilty.
Yes.
And that's it.
Mm.
So and totally
beyond a reasonable doubt.
Correct. The mm-hmm. state needs to prove that he's guilty. If the state cannot prove that beyond reasonable doubt, then there's a chance he's not guilty.
Correct. And the term beyond reasonable doubt, case law has delved into it so many times. And then what is the main thing is that even if the issue of doubt is not the issue, if that makes any sense, but there is nothing that convinces the court that there is any other decision it can reach apart from not guilty. They have to give the benefit of the doubt to the accused because the standard is so high. If the evidence is such that the court goes like,
It could be.
This was lacking. This was not there. That part that this was not there already sways everything to the side of the accused.
I mean, I think ultimately that it does become quite unfortunate,
yeah,
for victims, because unless the law changes, the victim is always on the back foot in proving always that, you know, the perpetrator, there's no doubt the perpetrator did it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's not the other way around. The perpetrator is not proving they didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's us or the state must prove he didn't do it.
Yes.
He doesn't have to do anything.
Yes. And also, unfortunately, there's other processes in the court, in the Criminal Procedure Act, to be specific for this case, that the state and the defense attorney would be well aware of, and of course the presiding officer, which the rest of the nation would not know. So when I was listening to the judgment in detail, in all rape cases, all of them, it doesn't matter what it is, there's always a victim statement and there's a first report statement. And then when the trial starts, it is those two statements that are always important, and those two witnesses are called, right? If there so happens to be a third witness, even better. The third witness may not have observed what have happened or that, but they may be a witness in terms of maybe after what that incident, this is what they can attest to. So in the judgment, the presiding officer said there was no corroborating evidence. When I heard her say the cautionary rule will be applicable, remember there were 33 charges. That means there were 33 victims. But all these victims are not testifying on each other's behalf. It's in time, you say, speaking what time you saying went through, Pimelo speaking what Pimelo went through. So in each and every charge, they are a single witness. There is no corroborating evidence. There is no first report, which is what the judge said. Where is the first report? Where is the person that they cried to say, mom, friend, aunt, whoever, this is what happened? Where is that person who can corroborate what she's saying? The state failed them firstly in that aspect, right? Now, with the cautionary rule says the court must be very cautious in accepting the evidence of a single witness. There were 33 witnesses, but they are single witnesses in their own accounts, because no one is there to corroborate or assist them. So now the court is faced with, okay, there's three accused, and of these three accused, when they defended themselves against this, there's three versions where they were not contradicting each other, where the state failed to penetrate them, to get them to contradict each other. So now there's three against one for every one of the 33 people that were there. That's how the state failed. That's the cautionary rule. That's the single witness rule. So that's the first part that they failed in. And then the second part that the judge mentioned was there was interference on the state's behalf. I remember she mentioned the WhatsApp group that one of the prosecutors opened. And she or he, the prosecutor said it was for logistic reasons. And instead of that being investigated, all the messages were deleted from that WhatsApp group. Why? If it was a situation whereby as a WhatsApp group, so that Lee 33, I can talk to you simultaneously, great. But in that WhatsApp group, what that prosecutor ought to have done is say, okay, I have all your witnesses, all your statements. Give me other witnesses who can corroborate your issue. That way, we consolidate Dinto early. So that by the time it goes to trial, he's fine. But instead, we don't know what happened in that WhatsApp group because all the messages were deleted. Why? And then the other part that she mentioned is that in the cross-examination of the accused, there was no attempt to try and get to the truth. It was like on the top. There was nothing really about the first witness said this, you are saying that, make it make sense. You know, they were not trying to get to the truth. And worse still, what I got from that, from the judgment as well, was the prosecutor of 14 years did not know what the definition of rape is.
So is this common where you find that the issues that the judge brought forward happen often?
I see it mostly in aspirant prosecutors, and aspirant are newbies, literally just admitted into prosecution. They're learning. You expect that from them. 14 years.
So, what happened, do you think? Because there were too many.
The first thing was that I remember the first presiding officer had to recuse himself because he was housing one of the witnesses or two of the witnesses, something like that. So, he was deemed to be biased. So it was the change of the presiding officers. I think we went through two.
Yeah,
and
we
then
did.
This one yeah. was the last one. I forgot what the second one, why they had to leave.
I don't know, but I think they were related to somebody or you something see. Like that. Yeah.
So there was an issue of bias yeah. there already.
Yeah, yeah.
But the presiding officers are not the issue. The issue is the dominus litis, the dominator of the litigation, which is the state. They changed about four times.
Yes, yes.
Which is a problem. Why are you changing? Because now when Thabi Singh was the one who started with the case from the beginning, from the time it was getting postponed and the indictment and all of that. The issue was now at the indictment stage. When a matter starts, it always starts in the lower court, in the match court, which means investigations have to be done. And then once that is completed, then an indictment to the high court has to go. Indictment is basically a charge sheet, for lack of a better term. That charge sheet now stipulates in detail what this person is going to be facing in the higher court. That was an issue. The charges were not clear. The charges were not accurate. They had to be removed. This was discovered in the pre-trial phase. That time we're thinking we're ready for trial, but now there's not evidence to support whatever charges were in the first indictment. That had to be scrapped and redone. Then a new prosecutor came in. So now a new prosecutor has to now familiarize themselves with the docket and then create a charge sheet. And that charge sheet, the indictment, when it came, it was also incorrect. It was also struck out by this very same judge to say, it's not correct. It is not correct. Because in pre-trial, we don't go into the details of the case. Because then that particular judge would have to recuse themselves because they now know what you're going to bring forth as evidence. But they have to have an idea on what is opposed and what is not opposed so they know which trajectory the matter is going to take. In the pre-trial, that's when it was discovered, no, the indictment had to go back three times. Why? Where was the, if this particular prosecutor who's in the high court doesn't know how to draft a charge sheet, what did they learn in the lower court? That's where you learn how to draft a charge sheet, you know? And if they were failing, what happened to the DPP? Who would then take over to the drafting of the charge sheet? Was there nothing being done there as well? So there's too many things that happened in the beginning, before even the trial started, that already started the ball of horrible things that have happened. And even the questioning of the witnesses. As a prosecutor, you're questioning, you are doing examination in chief. Your job is to bring forth the truth, yes, but also protect your witness. They were not protected. They were violated on those stands.
We've been hearing a lot about what recourse Omotoso has.
Yes.
What recourse do the victims have? Because the judgment states that, you know, the state did not do its job properly.
Yeah.
So in other words, there's an admission to, we have failed you.
Unfortunately, in criminal matters, the state, the prosecutor, is your attorney.
I know, yeah.
So now the question is, and the NPA doesn't answer to the LPC like the rest of us. It would be a situation wherein if your attorney has failed you to that extent, you report them to the LPC. The LPC deals with them. So now what do? You either report them to themselves to say, you failed me, or you may look at it. It will be interesting. I haven't seen yet if there has been a civil case against the NPA for their faith. I know that there's this, always a civil case from the accused to say the NPA, you have done this, you've done that.
Yeah,
but it will be interesting to see a witness, a client of the NPA taking them to court. I would actually have to find out if that has ever been done. And if it has, then the state has opened itself up to both a civil suit from the accused and a civil suit from its own witnesses. But even if they were to get a civil suit from the witnesses and they won, the witnesses will never see justice because Omotoso cannot be charged for the same crime twice. It's done.
The accused he's got lots of options now.
Yes, yes.
Unlike the victim.
Yeah. So now he's got 8 years worth of time wasted. He's got 8 years worth of prison time. He's got 8 years worth of lawyer's fees.
He didn't go to prison, right?
Oh, no, no, no. He came out. He was on bail. But that time that he spent before bail, he's got 8 years worth of him not being able to work and earn a living. The church shut down, if I'm not mistaken. All of those things put in a civil suit. We're looking at millions that the state will be liable should they be able to draft their papers properly. The state is going to be liable for millions and give to this man.
And the victims?
Nothing. Nothing.
We've got a voice note in Tabiseng.
Okay, but I'm clear about what you tell me, about your advice you tell me last week. There's a problem now. Ngicela ungenzele iclarity kule nto le siphemolo. Ntabiseng Dubaza, ne? Indlu bakuye kamkhulu wakho, ne? Bese uyashona, ne? Isale nomamakho, bese umamakho izinto akazilungisi. Does that thing inikeze umuntu onemali right yokuthi ayithenge? Because manje sengitshelwa amanga ukuthi like indlu ifuvele umama azange ibize yena. So those people who have bought the house, they have a right to buy a house while sihlala kuyo kuye yethu. So I even asked those people ukuthi what happened to the next of kin. Kahle you are telling me ukuthi if umuntu unendlu and then bese uyashona abantwana bakhe basala kule ndlu bahlala kuyo and then ingabizi bona, mina onemali une right yokuthenga leyo ndlu leyo just because unemali. Yo, these are blue lies I hear from the okay, let me also hide his identity, but I was not satisfied with that man's answer because I definitely know Guti. He's defending those people that are busy those house issue things. Help me with the clarity. Yeah, logo Guti. Do they have right to do that?
No, just because you have money doesn't mean you have a right to do anything. So if like you're saying, in Ile Mkolo, Mkolo died and then it went to your mom. In the olden days, in terms of the Black Administration Act, which is now repealed, but it was a situation, Yahore, all the houses and anything that was immovable property belonged to the man. And in that title deed, for lack of a better term, because it wasn't a title deed, it was like a form wherein you put in your next of kin. So there would be a list. It would be Mkolo and then his wife and then the kids and all of that. And then it would go down that list. So if Mkolo died and Makoko died, then it would be the kids who would be next in line. So what you need to do is that you need to go to the deeds office, ne? The deeds office, see, with the RF number, and then they will give you that thing. And then you will see, Hurina, in accordance with the list that was there, who was supposed to be the one to take over from your mom. And if there was no one else, it means everybody else who stems from your mom, which is you and your siblings, would be the ones to inherit the property that you live in. So usually what we say is that you need to wind up estate, yaga mama, yaga mkolo, nan nan. But the law has also seen, Hori, there's a huge gap that needs to be covered because of the Black Administration Act. So there's something we call a redistribution agreement, where the parties can then agree that this is what we agree upon in terms of the title deed, or all of you are being included in the title deed without the estate being finalized. So go to the deeds office, Kala, and then see what's happening with the papers.
All right, let's take another voice note. And before we go to a break, I think we've got a break, but let's take a listen to a voice note.
Dumelang, my queens. I hope you all are well. I have a question for Sintabiseng. I'll try to be short. So last year, my dad took ill and couldn't continue with work because he needed medical attention. And recently, I've signed him up for UIF's illness claims. The first payment went through successfully. We are awaiting the second one. Now, his previous employer is asking that he signs a voluntary termination of work agreement, and he'll give him a certain settlement amount. citing that all his employees are working without pension funds. And when we asked for the copy of a contract where they signed for this, we haven't received it to date. Now, my question is, should he sign that agreement, will it clash anyhow with his UIF proceedings?
No, usually UIF and that payment are two separate things, because the employer, the second you sign your contract, has to start paying towards your UIF. So that is, those are two completely separate worlds. My question is, are they not medically boarding him? Mm-hmm. That is the important question.
Because he's sick.
Yeah, because he's sick. And medical boarding has a whole process. Mm-hmm. So it can't be a situation you are voluntarily leaving. So my further question would be, is there no hope for dad going back to work? Or is there no hope for dad working while he's ill? In other words, maybe working from home or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, I think find that out. But you can also, yeah, with the contract, you need that contract. But you need more the code of conduct, Diabona, to see what is happening. So maybe get clarity from them. Are they trying to medically board him? If they're medically boarding him, they have to follow a certain process, because payments are a lot more than a settlement agreement for you to voluntarily leave work. So get that clarity. And if you're happy with how they're intending on doing it, then you may sign it freely. It will not really affect your UIF.
All right, I'm going to take a quick break before we go back to the lines. We see those calls, so we'll come back with them. With Ntabi saying 086-000-0959. And you can send the voice notes on 063-688-0959. Yeah. Thanks so much for staying with us. 21 minutes after 9 o'clock. Let's go to Anonymous, who's been holding for some time. Anonymous, thank you so much for calling. Good evening and welcome.
Hi, Pimela.
Hello,
yes. I've got a question for Mr. Thing.
Okay,
I was working for a particular company,
mm-hmm.
and during the execution of my duties, I was involved in an accident,
mm-hmm.
whereby the I was injured, but I never got any compensation fund as a claimant. They simply took me to a private hospital, and then I started attending a physiotherapy,
mm-hmm.
I think, for a number of times. Then from there, my physiotherapist told me at one point that he received a call from the management that he must stop seeing me at the expense of the company, because it's been a while now that I'm busy attending the physiotherapy,
mm-hmm.
and he still says I'm not well anymore.
Yes.
So last year in July, I came across difficulties, personal difficulties, so I had to take early retirement,
mm-hmm.
in a form of, early retirement. Now, my problem is the physiotherapy that I did not finish. I think it's catching up with me, because I've got a constant headache. I have lower back pain.
Mm.
I can't stand for too long. I can't sit down for too long. When I sit down for a period of a time, when I have to get up, it's as if someone is pulling me by my tailbone. I can't get up. I can't stand for too long. I can't carry heavy things. Like, I think I'm legally disabled, but the company did not pay me. So I want to find out if I have legal ground to sue the company to pay for my medical bills.
When did you leave the company?
I left last year in July, August.
Yeah, it's going to be a bit difficult. Did you fight it from the inside when they stopped your physio?
Yes, I did try to fight it from the inside, but there's this thing of being victimized, and you are intimidated. Being called someone who's lazy, you don't want to work, you're coming up with excuses so that you don't have to do your normal duties, stuff like that. So I ended up letting it go. But I did raise it with management, but the response that I got, it told me that, just let it go. But the unfortunate part is I decided to stop working because I had personal problems.
Mm.
I needed money and stuff.
Mm.
So now that I'm sitting at home, I'm realizing that, no, man, I'm not okay. And I don't know if I have grounds to sue the company.
I'm not going to lie to you.
It depends on the time. Yeah,
yeah. I'm not going to lie to you. It's going to be a little bit difficult. Nothing is really, really impossible. But
Anonymous, can we just maybe ask you, Honali, maybe the physio that you were using, who can give you a current report?
I think even the hospital, because the physio, when he saw me, each time he had to see me, I had to go to the hospital, the original hospital, where I was admitted at. Mm-hmm. And then every time I had to see him, I went there. But I know his offices. I'm not sure if he's still around, but I think I know where his offices are. And all the documentation, whenever I went to see him, remember, he would need to write me a note to take to work. Yes. So I tried to keep all copies of those visits of mine, even the x-rays after the accident and stuff. I tried to keep all those things. I still have them with me. But my problem is, do I have legal leg to stand on?
What I'm saying is that what will determine whether you've got a legal leg to stand on, partly, yes, the time, but even now, you would have to have another assessment.
To confirm.
So it must be a medical assessment. That person must be able to say, "Mere una alimenti," and then we thought maybe things were fine, only to realize now, hurry. These were underlying, whatever the medical
as a direct result of the
first
accident.
So a medical person will have to assess you now and corroborate or no, the problems you have now are linked to that accident, even though dihlahela now.
And also, if you can get that physio to give you that communication that the employer said they must stop attending you from their pocket, that would also help. So the timing, if we can get those two things, maybe it will be a better position to try and sue the employer. Because if
I have to find that physiotherapist, then I also have to go to a medical doctor for them to examine me and determine.
Why you thinking the reason you are finding the old one is just to be someone who does corroborate that they were told to stop with the treatment.
With the treatment.
Otherwise, the papers that you did copies on are still good enough for the new person. If you're going to have a new person, if the old one is willing to see you and give you a new report upon new assessment, it's even better.
Okay.
Yeah. To use that, and you never know, maybe won't I be saying bana bakata kata banyana, I don't know, we'll challenge it, let's see.
Yes, that's what I'm hoping for.
Because
now I see, even if they call me back and say come and work, I won't be able to cope, and the type of work that I did, it needed me to be physically fit for me to be able to execute my duties, because I have to climb up and down from the thing that I'm working with.
Yeah, no, I think the one thing that you will definitely need is obviously the old reports, which we have, which is fine. You will definitely need an email or letter or whatever that the employer sent to the physio to say stop doing the work, and then a current one that can link your situation, the fact that you can't sit, you can't walk, to the accident itself, which was stopped by the employer. Then we have grounds for us to open a civil suit. Then the time issue will not be a problem.
No, it will not be a problem. Yeah. That was my main concern. Yeah. That what if they will tell me that, no, it's been too long.
If you wait 3 years, it will be too long. Right now, you're still good.
I'm still good.
Yeah.
So can I get the assistance from you?
Yes, man, you can come see us. Let's see what we can do.
Thank you, man. Thank you so much. All right, let's go to Ingrid, who's calling from Four Ways. Hello, Ingrid.
Hi, I'm still an out in Tavis.
Hi, Ingrid.
Yeah, anonymous, but it's fine.
Asky,
see. Yeah, no, that's fine. It's my fault. I'm having an issue at work.
Yes.
Where last year, December, towards second week of December, so my manager said I have a she wants to put me on a PIP, so poor performance.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally said to her, I do not acknowledge or agree because of I've met all the, you know, the sponsor or the client timelines, deadlines,
mm-hmm.
and she knows the workload and everything, issues. So now, that was second week of December, and then mid last month, then someone proposed from the senior company, in the company, sorry, proposed a mutual separation agreement.
Okay?
Like that, like without saying anything, there was no follow-up with the PIP and whatever.
Mm.
So I said to the lady, so the proposal came with more like a retrenchment package.
Yeah.
So it was 2 months, 1 month notice, and then they'll pay me another month, and then 2 weeks of every year that I've worked.
Yes.
So then I went to consult, and, you know, I went back with my proposal to say, because of the industry that we are in, I won't be able to find a job in the next 2 months. So, and then they would need to apply for a tax directive, and then I'll need to be paid my days, leave days, and whatever. So now they came back and said, I'm not in a position to negotiate, number
Karen.
One. Yes. Mm. Number two, I am. They can only give me 1 month. That's it. So they can only, let's say, instead of 1 month notice, they'll give me 2 months notice, but I need to leave as soon as possible.
What are they basing this on again?
I don't know. They just, to say it's because of a poor performance. And then I said, looking at everything that I've done, and there was never conversation about me being a poor performer.
Hey.
There was never a highlight for me to, but I know that another colleague has been targeted for the same thing, but So now I'm in back and forth that they are under pressure to finalize this thing. And they put it in writing. They want to finalize it by the 31st of March. So
whoa.
I only responded today to their email.
Mm.
So I don't know if I can come and consult. I'm willing to, you know, to pay just for advice because I know they're going to come back immediately. But they will respond to you within 15 minutes and say, this is not allowed, this is not. And for everything that I've asked in my proposal, they ignored it. So they didn't even attend to that.
So it sounds like they're trying to do a Section 189, Subsection 6, from what I can determine. Ne? Maybe it's not sub 6, maybe it's sub 3. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's Section 189, the bottom line. So they're trying to say it's poor work performance. Ne? So in terms of the Code of Good Practice, the LRA, ne? It says that if you're going to determine poor practice, you need to show that you have coached this particular employee, that you want work done in a certain way. I get it, they have their code of conduct, how they expect you to work, blah, 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 blah. So have they followed their own code of conduct now, their own process? And where is the proof? Because if you are failing, if they're trying to put you on a PAP, which is the poor work performance thing, if they're doing that, there has to be steps prior to that. That is a last resort because you are failing. There has to be a situation where there is a sit down with you to say, we noticed that you are not meeting X, Y, and Z. And then they document it and then they give you like 30 days to try and assess to see, are you catching on? And if you're not catching on, they give you another one maybe. If you're catching on, then it stops. That's where it stops. A PIP is when it is a dire situation. Nothing you are doing makes sense. And then they need to put it up against your KPI. So if your KPI says your requirements are to meet the client's requirements and the office target and whatnot, if your KPI, monthly, yearly, however it is that they do it, then does not speak to the reasons that the PIP, then they really have no grounds, because what they are now pushing you towards is for them to say you must sign this retrenchment thing, which is actually an unfair dismissal. So when you fight it back and you say, no, you haven't proven to me the LRA area, in terms of the code of good practice, I can tell you they don't know, because most employers don't want to familiarize themselves with labor relations. So the code of good practice, Ere, you need to prove that you have followed your own KPI. And my KPI says this. And there is no way in the years that I have been here that it shows I haven't been meeting target. Show me where this is. Otherwise, put this back where it is and I continue working. And then it will force them, hopefully, to bring an offer that makes sense. And if they're wanting to retrench, letting, it's a section 189 capital letter A. They must show reasons why they're retrenching. Is it for financial reasons?
Yeah.
Is it for what? What has happened? Restructuring in, but they cannot say that your position is redundant. That doesn't work in the law anymore. Not at all. So these are the things that you need to throw at them. What are they trying to do?
All right.
Okay.
And your contact details, will you share them at the end of the
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I will.
Anonymous.
Thank you. All right, let's take a listen to a voice note.
Austin Tabisang, I have a question for you. So my grandfather, which was my grandmother, an RTP house, which was written, listed under Bonabadi 2, like Mr. and Mrs. Roman. And then after that, I shifted, I dula with the other wife, who never so officially married Mara, never dula Badi 2. So now my question is, since Abile Lebana with both wives, I guess, Hema Gogwaka to Tokofala, no. Hema Gogwaka to Tokofala, no. Yo Salalema. Yo Salalema, my mother, who is the only, lurking child from my grandmother, or Retroyuela between Mama Aga le the other family. Like, how does it work?
Okay. So, the beauty, if I can put it that way, Gorabaning, Hamkolo, did he say Mkolo Soka? It's Obwaka Ham Mama Kasoka. Mkolo, ne? Mkolo, mama.
I don't know what that is. To be clear.
Yeah.
One a nyeti basadi
by two. Yes.
No, let's play it again.
Yeah. Austin Chabisang, I have a question for you. So, my grandfather, ne? Nana basadi by two. So, nanyetu muwane fela, which was my grandmother. Banalin, an RTP house, which was written, listed under Bonabadi 2, Mr. and Mrs. Roman. And then after that, I shifted, I dula with the other wife, who never so officially married Mara, never dula Badi 2. So now my question is, since Abile Lebana with both wives, I guess, Hema Gogwaka to Tokofala, no. Hema Gogwaka to Tokofala, no. Yo Salalema. Yo Salalema, my mother, who is the only, lurking child from my grandmother, or Retroyuela between Mama Aga le the other family. Like, how does it work?
Okay.
Brilliant question.
Yes. So, it sounds like there's no will. So, as a result, interstate succession. It sounds like Mkulu is already gone from what he's saying.
Yeah.
Ne? Which means to avoid the fighting between the siblings, which is his mother and the other,
and the other side.
Yeah, wind up estate because Gogons are pay like here. So wind up estate Mkulu.
No.
Yes. Akira, his grandmother is still alive.
Hey,
yeah. His grandmother is still alive.
Mm-mm.
With if Makoko aka hala, no. Hutleta halang. Is the house going to stay with my mother?
Is he asking about his grandmother dying or the mother dying?
The grandmother.
So Santa Pila
grandmother is still alive. So they need to wind up estate Mkulu.
Okay.
Because if Mkulu is married to his grandmother, like he's saying, and wasn't married to the woman this side, in terms of interstate succession, already that 100% RDP house belongs to his grandmother and grandfather.
Yes.
So now that grandfather is dead, grandmother already 50% rebella one side. She now has 50% of that. 50% Mkulu, which means she gets 25% already, which means it's 75% of that RDP house. And got that 25% deal is sitting, what would usually happen is that it would be divided amongst the siblings. But even in that 25%, Magogo is still entitled to a share in that remaining 25%. And if the share, Hutu, it's your the spouse is entitled to a child's share or whichever is larger. So if in that 25%, a child's share equals to a third of that property or whatever is larger, she will likely, if not 100%, get that house fully under her name. But you can only do that under winding up the estate. So Iyang, Master of the High Court, Tikapo, Match Court, delivers a letter of authority under Magoko and make sure that house is transferred under her name. The kids, and this is the downside also, it's a will. If you don't do a will, and then interstate succession kicks in. Even if the kids are minors, they will not get anything from that estate because the spouse comes first.
Ludwig. Let's take a voice note.
Good evening, Thabiseng and Pamelo. A quick one, Thabiseng. I took someone to small claims court and then I won, and then he was told to repay me all the monies. But then the commissioner also said, if he skips a month without a payment, making a payment, then I don't know whether they will garnish his salary or something like that. So I just wanted to ask you, Kuba, what's the way forward since he has skipped a month with no communication, no call, no text, nothing? Thank you.
Ruthless.
Like, I'm willing.
Doesn't play
games. So what
is...
So it is a contempt of court at the end of the day. Ne? So what you need to do is go back to court and say, listen, he has failed to pay his money.
He was going to tell us how much. His small claim. So
it's
the chances
below 20,000. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm just wondering, his small claims, it's lower than 20,000.
Yeah.
So it's Agila Mufachelet.
Yeah.
Skip only 1 month.
How many months has he paid?
Yeah. And is it worth? I'm not laughing.
I can't say you don't pay at least.
Is it worth the trouble again?
Chelete.
I can write a calculator. Okay.
That increases the pay.
So, what can he do?
Go back to the court.
And then what?
And then I'm going to hapatala. And then I'm going an order wherein they can garnish his salary directly. The employer, if asabereki, then I'm going a warrant of execution.
Uh-huh.
That warrant of execution, watamaya, he goes with it to the sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
The sheriff then goes to this person's house and attaches stuff and sells them in order to satisfy the debt.
We must be fair and honest to each other. I'm just saying, let us say onamukolta 10,000.
Yeah.
He paid some. He skipped 1 month. Utla ko sheriff. Sheriff is going to then go to that person's house.
Mm-hmm.
And what can possibly cost under 10,000 rand?
The copy. TV.
The copy tie.
Radio. Mm-hmm. Stereo.
So I'm... I just want us to be honest
pragmatic
with one another.
Mm.
Hore, Papa, has it about attention under 10,000? Kin ki ing e utwe kreang ya under 10,000? E to fund 10,000.
Yeah.
To copy the teaspoon.
Ba attention, the microwave, the kettle.
I'm merely saying to him. And then there will be a process. I already said the copy teaspoon.
Yes. That will be all in the hands of the sheriff.
So the sheriff is the one that's going to manage. Hore, hore, kisa hadi teaspoon. Hadi sarikse hadi teaspoon hadi copy tahe.
Hadi sarikse hadi sarikse. Then he has to now I say attach immovable property. And if Motono are renting, that is a problem for 10,000 rand. But like
I'm just asking, realistically, Ntabise, be honest to this gentleman. What's your honest advice? I want to just also add this.
Okay.
Part. If we gave him your number and he came to you, he must first pay first your fee.
Hey.
By the time he's finished talking to you twice, if he did it,
yeah.
I'm just saying.
I am actually, unfortunately, dealing with a case whereby a woman was sequestrated for 30,000 rand. Barekisten kuya hai ya 1.6 million to satisfy 30,000 rand.
Okay, so he can get nice recourse.
Yes. It's just that it's,
I get it. And no, even if it takes time, the question is that what you want? And yeah. I think for me, that's what I'm asking.
Yeah.
If the person doesn't have immovable assets, it's a matter of waiting for the
Yes, and that may never happen sometimes.
The question is, do you want that to happen?
Mm.
Do you want to go raid that person's kitchen cupboard? Mm.
The fact that it's a month and he's already calling in, clearly that's and the way we are going.
Claims court.
Hey, that's the route we are going.
No, I think it's important for people to follow through with what they want to do. Anonymous in Soweto, good evening and welcome.
Hello,
Ntate.
Yeah. Okay, ne puta record ya ka uka wa ini kira ko e ko ai ko ko mo to be ka ngena ko.
Mhm.
Kiro ba ka assistant ya propono.
Okay.
Ne ba rumela ko ntwe ko constitutional hill.
Mhm.
Propono office.
Yeah.
Mo le ba ngo kwa nya li di lo ya marani ya ko Pitori.
Yeah.
Ra bua ka Zoom.
Mm.
Yeah, so I've had more na kauri. It's an inconvenience. Kauri na kimo tobek. We tira ang patene lo ya kamo kisi ya tobek.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so zanga sa ku tamoni. Kamo na lingo lo ka ita email kwa ngo la ko propone office.
Mm.
Also.
Na we want joe sa. Excuse.
Obatla mototo utusang pro bono. Mujobe.
Ane want sepe si se lo ane se ba. Don lo ya na zanga sa ku tamoni. Na kauri na ite uta ku tamoni na. And to send to the people who are coming to the house, 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 to the
house,
to the house, to the house, to the house, to the house, to the house, to the house, to the house, to the house, to the house, to the house, to the house, to the
house,
I
legal aid.
I think over a million. The estate.
Fee ya ing?
No, our estate.
Oh, this is the estate.
Yeah.
This is the state. Doesn't matter how na kibo guy. Legal aid ya to say it.
Mufe address ya legal aid.
O Joe Bega ke on Fox Street. Example na ke earring address ya tem. But na Joe Bega the legal aid office on Fox Street.
Batla legal aid office ko Fox Street. How ka Google o tla thola address.
Yeah.
Start from scratch.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye bye. Okay, let's go to Bobby in Soweto. Hello, Bobby.
How are you? I'm calling about an issue pertaining to my uncle. Ne?
Yes, sir.
He was working for this company
mm-hmm.
since 2002-03. And then at a certain time, around 2013, they got given a different contract. So they were drivers.
Okay.
So they got given a different contract that said they were going to be owning trucks and then sort of like subcontractors.
Okay.
Within the
company.
But bearing in mind, I think, the level of education and the understanding of these kind of contracts, these guys just jumped onto this contract.
Mm.
They went on until 2018-19.
Mm-hmm.
Around that time, they started asking questions. Then they were thrown out of the company.
Mm.
Later on, they went to complain to BEE because it was under BEE. And in 2021 or 22, they got findings from the BEE,
mm-hmm.
which were favoring them.
Which were?
The company. favoring
okay.
a group of,
yes.
of drugs. But unfortunately, up to today, they were given runarounds about what the company is saying. So the BEE has had to instruct the company to obviously do this and that.
Mm-hmm.
But the company wasn't saying much, and the BEE guys went responding to what is the company saying to the guys.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, some of the guys, I think there were seven, three are late.
Mm.
The other four, or maybe two, are late, and then the other five are still remaining.
Yeah.
But every time they find help, it changes. Every time they find help, in fact, they spoke to the lady from the tribunal, who said the company is saying they can be given 100,000
mm-hmm.
each to loan to them so they can get trucks. Yes.
Mm.
And I advised my uncle, don't go for that. In fact, the letter that they were given, which they are in possession of,
mm-hmm.
didn't have a letterhead or anything.
Mm.
So I said, this is not going to work. But when they went back and said, we're not signing this thing, the lady acted as though knows nothing about that offer.
Yeah.
But these guys have this letter with them.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys are at loggerheads with these people, but they don't know where to go. And it's been years that they are fighting this thing. He's been out of work. My mm-hmm. uncle has been out of work since 2019.
So you said that they went to a tribunal and then it was found in their favor.
They've got the findings in hand.
Okay. So why don't they just approach a court to make that finding in order of court?
I think because they do not have the funds to can, because it looks like it might cost them. I think they're also dilly-dallying about... They've approached a couple of lawyers.
Yeah.
Actually, the last caller was speaking about pro bono. Saying to the guys, we think the case might be feasible, but the attorneys get a bit excited about it, but as soon as it's about to go anywhere, they turn on them.
That's weird. Okay, yeah. So I think that...
I'm going to say this. This is in the media space.
Okay.
The company is in the media space, so I think, personally, somebody knows somebody, and every time they hear, oh, you are trying to go against so-and-so.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. Really, from what you're saying, it sounds like all you need to do is take the matter to court. And with the amount involved, obviously, it's going to go to the High Court. So, yes, I suppose the main issue is the funds. But if they already have something in their favor, how is the company going to oppose such an application? Because
so at a certain stage, I think sometime last year, as they were going on about it, the company all of a sudden said they never got the findings from the BEE.
Well, that's not anyone's problem. If they wanted the findings, they can approach the tribunal. That's neither here nor there.
Of course.
Yeah.
So what is it that these guys can do?
Really, the only thing they can do...
Then they keep on dying.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, that you need to approach a court. I would say, but urgency won't work, because we won't be able to argue for urgency anymore. So take it to court. The downside is that Hwanajana in Joburg, is everything happening in Joburg or outside of Gauteng?
Joburg.
Yeah, see, that's where the problem is. Right now in Gauteng, we are struggling to get dates. The earliest dates we're getting is 2029, 2030. So we don't know if they'll be alive.
Then I'm joining the line. When am I coming to see you there?
Phone away, it's appointment to you. You will find me there in the office.
Thanks, Bobby. Let me quickly go to somebody else before we run out of time. Anonymous, you're in Benoni. Hello, Anonymous.
Hello, Njani. It's
Konjani Puti.
Njani.
Yeah,
Bobby.
Okay, Puti.
umfana wami uqeda ukuthenga indlu una 5 months angenele kulondlu leyo. Ye angenele kulondlu leyo manje ine kunama problem kulondlu. Problem yakhona i-plumbing. Shuthi yena uhlala phezulu then ivuzela kubiza langaphansi lindlu langaphansi. Manje uripotile ibhenki yayazo into leyo mara akalitholi incwedo then agent ngentsenseleleni iyazi ngale nto leyo manje ayisabambi ifoni. Mabe ngifuna ukwazi ukuthi bengayenza kanjani mela yenzima kunje malingale problem eso.
Was it disclosed at the time your purchase angithi in the OTP in the offer to purchase ne before yeah. You have a 7-day period wherein you are cooling off period angithi and before then there's always a situation where there has to be a disclosure that these are the problems or the defects of the property. Did the previous owner give this information out now?
Okay.
And then yeah, that's the thing. And if the OTP doesn't disclose and both previous owner ne agent don't disclose to the new buyer, ne? Then yeah. then your nephew une right ya kuti angai hambisa high court or wherever it would be to fix the problem. So what I would do is I would suggest Uguti, he must get quotes on how to fix the issue. Ne? 3 different quotes. And then send it straight to the owner's draw and also the agent. Hori, you didn't disclose this. This thing didn't happen within 5 years or whatever. I'm still new. It happened within this much time. It is still your duty as the previous owner to ensure that the property is proper for me to move in. And if they fail to do so, let him fix it. To go and sue them for the amount you're fixing and for them for their failure to disclose. And that would then mean that they will owe him money. And if it means reducing the price of the house to whatever, Akihani, he's already gotten a loan from the bank for that particular amount, but they may be liable for that particular amount. It could have been deducted had we known about this before we brought the property.
Wait. And Ntabi saying, there's also, and maybe speak to this, where the seller could have said
footstoots
or nothing I am aware of. In other words, they're not saying they deny it, but they're saying in the papers when they were asked the question, are you aware of the leak? Not that I'm aware of. The answer could be not that I'm aware of. Does that still make them liable?
No, it does. It does because there has to be an inspection of the property. You may not be aware of it, but you need to inspect it and give me a clearance certificate to confirm things like electricity, plumbing, all of these things are still proper. And if none of those things were given to me before I move in, it means you failed to do your duty as the owner to sell me a property that is worth the money that you are charging.
Whose job was that?
And the manje, umuntu ozile wazocheka laphana indaba yelo ye plumbing, which is about 100,000.
Yeah, no, it akunikeza i-code.
Yes, get that code, ne?
Then he also hamba nayo lapha e-court.
And the manje ukhala ngokuthi umshana mphele uqeda ukuthenga indlu, nje ngisho ukuthi una 5 months angenile.
Yeah.
Ube uthatha imali yamaloya ukhalela lona.
Eish, that's another thing. But kala pele, before you go to lawyers and stuff, akiri unani quote. There's the quote. Hambisa leyo quote to the owner and also to the agent to say, this is the cost that I am dealing with.
Agent has a
But send it in anyway. Send it in an email and then wait for the response 7 days. If there's no response, then you know you have grounds. You're going to hambisa court.
Oh.
Yeah. So, but start this. Lay a foundation yako by sending all this information to both the owner and the agent.
Okay.
But
I'm not sure if you remember, but last week I sent a voice note explaining the dilemma I'm facing at work regarding my mental breakdown and the hearing that will be conducted. So the hearing was conducted and we got the results today, so I was given a final written warning. Mm. I'm not too happy with the outcome, as I wasn't expecting anything, any written warning or whatever. Is there any way I can dispute this warning? Because I definitely know that they are plotting something on me. They're waiting for a small mistake, and then obviously, and then I'm out. So it might just be it'll start being a hostile environment for me. So is there any way to dispute this warning?
You remember what I said last week?
You're not there to be loved.
No, guys. Leave it alone. Sana fela wena papa o shebe kopile. Ska contest.
I was actually thinking he's going to say he's dismissed.
No, don't contest it. And it sounds unfair, ne?
It sounds unfair, but it's actually
just the world, the way the world is, man. Just bona. Just sign it.
And also just look at your company's code of conduct or policy or whatever. Horena, how long does a final written warning last? If it's a month, if it's 3 months,
I mean,
or whatever.
I think I understand. I understand what he says. He says he's thinking that they're going to do, because it's a final warning.
Yeah.
Just sign the thing and try not to get another warning. Or I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Look at the time frame attached to your warning. Because challenging it may just
that's
lead
exactly
you be
that's
dismissed.
The thing that's going to get you dismissed.
I think it will get you dismissed.
If they want you out, I promise you, if you start challenging, oh, that's another story. Mm-mm. Just sign it.
And if you're challenging it, are you challenging it based on a gut feeling? Or are the things that are actually being done that are going against the company policy itself? And therefore, if you were to challenge it, would it lead to the result that they remove the warning and you are fine? Or do you genuinely think it would?
But let's just think about it. I'm the boss. I've decided let's say it's true. We want you out. And we decide we're going to go one step ahead to try and get you out, and we give you this final warning. What do you think challenging that is going to mean to the person who you are now fight? You're essentially saying, bring it on. And do you think that's going to make the relations better? Absolutely not. So, I don't know. My opinion is only worth 2 cents, but let me just, Abutuaga, just sit tight. Look down. Just sign. And just be out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
And if they have to find something else, then maybe at that point you will have grounds to go to the CCM. Don't challenge. Don't challenge.
But
don't go back.
But if you're going to challenge it, be sure. Be sure that at the end result is not dismissal. Be very sure.
What's your advice?
My advice is check first the code of conduct, yabona, or the policy, and check if the hearing had anything to do with anything in there. And if you were to challenge it, would it be overturned to being removed? If the chances are slim for that, don't do it. If the chances are higher that you may get dismissed, don't do it. So you're stuck between a rock and a hard place.
So let's say it's removed. What do you think is going to happen in that environment?
It's still going to be a hostile work environment. Exactly. You may end up resigning yourself, and then you're going to probably claim ginto, constructive dismissal as well. So these are things that you would have to look at.
Hey, askies. Dabi saying they want to know where you are.
So you can send us an email on info@dubazanaattorneys.co.za, or you can call our offices at 087-265-8010, or send a WhatsApp to 079-654-7523. Our offices are at 37 Harley Street in Randburg. You will find Mr. Nkosi Ndlovu. He's so excited to be there. He'll be there to assist you and set an appointment there. So yeah, that's where we will be.
Thanks, guys. We are back tomorrow at 8.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.